in the life of the Messiah. John 17, the high priestly prayer, verse 12. Okay, last week, we want to make sure that you got what it means to be one. And we talked about that referring to doctrine, purpose, and love. That's extremely important for unity. When someone says, we just need to get rid of our doctrinal distinctives and come together in love and unity, they don't know what they're talking about. When you see that he prays that, Father, they be as one as we are, he is not referring to the oneness of the Trinity, because you and I are not gods. So he cannot be referring to the oneness of nature as him and the Father are. He must be referring to some other kind of oneness. And so in that text, oneness by definition, and I want to make sure everyone gets this, it's oneness in doctrine, oneness in purpose, and oneness in love. The kind of love that has truth built into it. Okay? So let me explain this just a little bit, just as a review. In order for you and I to have unity with another believer, we must be on the same page theologically. Okay? You cannot do what they're telling you to do, is drop your doctrinal distinctives and let's all unite because we love Jesus. That's wrong. It's doctrine has to be right. Now, let me add to it. Inserted into doctrine, or inside of doctrine, is also doctrine of morality. Does that make sense? So you have your theological concepts of the Trinity, the hypostatic union of Christ, and whatnot. But then you also have in doctrine morality. For you and I to be on the same page with another Christian in unity, we must agree on the morality that the Bible talks about. So when a Christian, so-called, says, you know what, I'm a gay Christian, what do you respond back? That's an oxymoron. That's like saying flaming snowballs. Okay, it's an oxymoron. The two don't go together. You can't say, I'm gay and Christian. So the point about it is, if someone's diverging on morality, biblical morality, then you can't be one with them. It's predicated on their acceptance of biblical morality. So let's just do another thing. If they're shacking up, which is a big deal in our culture, they're shacking up, and a lot of couples do this that go to church. Dude, it's rampant. And they think it's not a problem because they've adopted a cultural mindset that it's no longer a shack up. It's we're trying things out, see if it works. And so now it's acceptable in the culture, and the church is now accepting it because they don't talk about it. And so you're sitting there like, hey, dude, I can't even have fellowship with you. You're in a shack-up situation. You're in what's called biblical fornication. And the thing about it is, not only from the church's standpoint, but then from their standpoint, there's no conviction. They don't feel anything. Hey, we could do what we're doing, a shack-up. Because if you just went back 30 years ago or 20 years ago, that was a no-no. You didn't do that, man. That's what Hollywood does. But now people in the church allow this to happen. It's not just a shack up. It's all kinds of morality things. Like, their kids are on drugs. And, you know, yeah, I know he smokes pot, but he's a pot-smoking Christian. What? What are we talking about, guys? It's okay to smoke marijuana. Well, it's just recreational. I don't care if it's recreational or what. I mean, I understand if someone has cancer and they're giving them, but that's a pill form sometimes they can take and stuff, but these guys are just doping up. And so now all of a sudden it's okay to be a druggie and a Christian at the same time. And it just, the list goes on. And you're like, I don't know how I can have unity with you, dude. It's just, we don't fly together on not only theology, but morality. So you have that issue. Okay, then purpose. How do you define that in oneness, in unity? Well, it comes down to understanding the church's purpose. What does the church and its purpose for? Is it a glorified social club? Or is it going after the Great Commission and discipling and doing what it needs to do? Because I can tell you right now, it's hard for you and I to have unity with another Christian who thinks church is a social club. And in the social club, you have to have rules in that social club. And the rules are, you can't offend me, Pastor. You can't say things that upset me. You can't offend me. You have to tell me niceties. And you have to pump me up. And you have to give a motivational speech to me because, you know, I've had such a tough week and I need you to uplift me. As Tony Robbins, as a motivational speaker. Okay, when you see that, and then you go to the church's website and then you see the Yelp comments on the side there of people commenting on the church. They'll say, man, really love the smoke and lights. Love the fog machine. And you think, where did they go? To a Las Vegas show? Or they have an Elvis impersonator do their Easter services? That's here locally. I would have walked out when I saw Elvis come out singing Hunk of Burning Love. I would have been out of there, man. You know, what in the world? Well, you have every right to criticize brothers and sisters in the Lord, because when you see your brother in sin, you're supposed to call it out. And the fact is, you can, Paul said, make a right judgment. He goes, don't you guys know you're going to judge angels one day? He goes, how come you guys can't settle these issues in the church? So he was implying you have the right to judge. If you don't have the right to judge, how do you call anyone out? So, you know, so Dick's out there robbing banks. I don't want to criticize him and hurt his feelings.
I get 10%.
Yeah, we get, you know, his check's cash too, even though he's robbing banks. Who am I to say anything? Is that the mindset? I mean, seriously, I mean, it's ridiculous, right? But people do that, and they're like, I can't say anything. You're living together, but I don't want to be critical. I don't want to remove the plank out of my own eye. You know, it's just, give me a break. The idea is, the implication from Scripture is that you make a right judgment. You have the right to call things out. And if someone's offended, too bad. Too bad. It is not a right of anybody to not be offended. That's not a right. You will be offended. Especially if you're in sin. I do it all the time. And people, they flip out on me. Every time. They flip out on me. I had someone flip out on me this week. It's chalk it up to another one. But you call them out and say, hey, dude, you can't be doing this. Well, I can't believe people are judgmental. You're not handling this correctly. It's always you don't handle this correctly. I have no explanation. I said, dude, this is black and white. Knock it off. So at the end of the day, people don't like to be called out on stuff. So get used to it and don't let them make you afraid. If you see something, say something. Don't say, I don't want to offend them. Okay, the last one, and we want to make sure we understand this, is love. Okay, well, not the gushy, sappy, emotional joy boy, what's his name? Joel Osteen, Rick Warren, the Bill Hybels type of love. We're talking biblical love. Biblical love is agape, which means that truth is implied inside of it. You love people with the truth. Okay, so you have to have that element in love. It always accompanies love, is that you have to love people with that element. If you love without truth, it turns into worldly love. So you have to have that element. Okay, so for me to have unity with another brother, they have to have that kind of love as well. Truth must be there. It can't be some gushy, non-truth issue. So that starts limiting us. That defines who we can fellowship with. I'm not trying to say restrict yourself, but if you say, I want to have fellowship with this person, and they seem like a good person to hang out with, they better have all three qualifications with them before I hang out with them. They better be on the same page doctrine, otherwise I'm going to get in a fight with them at the park one day. Or they better be on the same purpose, because when I call out what they're doing at their church, doing the social gospel, they're going to get mad at me. And then they better be on the same page of love. If you don't have that and you try to come together with them in unity, you'll end up in a fight. Every time. Because you're not on the same page. Now, what I'm finding myself out, I'm getting fewer and fewer people I can hang out with. Because otherwise I get in a fight. No, agape love includes grace, and grace implies relationship. And what that means is that I'm going to connect to the person relationally because I have your best interest. Agape love means I have your best interest in mind. I want the best for you. Hate plus truth equals revenge. I can tell someone the truth, but I can hammer them with revenge at the same time, right? Okay, so you know the difference, right? You can pound somebody with the truth, and you'll never have that relationship back again. But love or grace says, I value this relationship so much, I'm willing to tell you the truth about yourself because I want us to connect and be reconciled and be on, you know, in connection with each other. But this thing has to get fixed, dude, because it's impeding our relationship. That's agape love. It seeks the truth for the sake of the relationship, if that makes sense. Okay? I'm doing the truth because I want to preserve the relationship. If I'm doing truth out of hate, I don't give a rip about the relationship. Does that make sense? That's when you know you're off. I'm just going to tell the truth. That's the way I am. And you don't care if you ever see them again. Be careful about that one. You might be doing that for revenge. And so you notice that if you get off on doctrine and purpose, which is based on the Word, because the Word tells what our purpose is, the Word tells what our doctrine is, you can't have love. It's all predicated on that. So I know that seems like a lot. I'm telling you, this is one of the most important concepts you need to understand as we enter into this age of apostasy, because the war cry from the left is we need to drop our doctrinal distinctions and come together under the banner of Jesus, because we all love Jesus. That is not the unifier. Because the Mormon's going to sit there and say, I love Jesus too. But if I put the Mormon on the template, what happens? What's the first thing that comes to your mind? He doesn't fit the doctrine. He cannot love the same Jesus. Jehovah Witness or the social gospel guy. The social gospel guy might have his doctrine right, but his purpose is wrong. So if you use a template on anybody, it qualifies them. And it qualifies us. Right. How can you go to a church and have a female pastor out there? Because doctrinally, you're going to have to deal with Paul's Timothy admonition. And you're right. You're going to sit there till you're blue in the face, try to convince them, but they don't care. They've rolled right over the scripture. Okay, man, dude, we can't even hang out, dude, because you're like on a different page. So just take that one instance. And it seems like I'm making a mountain out of a molehill, but it's important. So the guy you're dealing with says, no, I don't believe what Paul told Timothy that a woman is not to have to teach or have authority over a man. Or I don't believe that. So what next? Okay. But that's what I'm saying. So we're having coffee at Spencer's, and he's popping off saying, I think a church can have a woman pastor. As a lead pastor, and you come back and say, well, what do you do with this passage? What does he say? He's just steamrolling over. Well, that was a cultural thing, you know, that happened, because the women were uneducated in Paul's day. And so now they're more educated. A lot of women went to seminary. They're sharp, Brandon. And I say, read the text. He didn't leave it there. He made a creation issue out of it. He says, because Adam was created first, not Eve, number one. Two, it was Eve that was deceived, not the man. He goes all the way back to creation. So that the argument that she's uneducated, and that now women are educated now, doesn't fly. So then what do they do? Thank you. Did you hear that? His wife really likes her, right? And the message makes him feel good. If I caught that right. Thank you. I'm not trying to be hard-nosed. I'm not trying to be an extremist because you're going to be called all kinds of things like that. How do you have fellowship that says, I'm going to just roll right over what Paul said, the apostle, because my wife likes the girl and because it makes me feel good? Hey, dude, what are we talking about there at that point? We're talking about feelings rather than theology, that their feelings and experiences trumping theology. I hope you see that. That's where we're at, guys. This is why you sit in the church and or the church in large in America, and you're like, dude, everyone's like this. What's wrong with them? And so it's like in football, what they're doing with you, instead of going back to the scriptures, they take the ball and they punt it. And they're punting it to piety, spirituality, or experience, this makes me feel. And before you know it, you're not even on the same page. So that's my point. That's why I think it's important that we spend some time on this. In Father, I pray that they are one like we are. That happens for some, but not for all. There's a lot of people that are off the chain because of that.